This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'd say 4 months ago, I, at that point, had never heard of Jussie Smollett. Now there's a Jussie Smollett story every other day, okay? So the latest is that the main people in the show, Taraji P. Henson, Terrence Howard, and others, have reached out because now with Disney and Fox being the same and all this coming together, they have written to powerful companies behind the show saying, well, this is part of it. Together as a united front, we stand with Jussie. And as their co-star, brother, and friend be brought back for a sixth season of Empire. Throughout Empire's five season, working with Jussie and watching how he conducts himself throughout this dramatic event, we have come to know not just the character Jussie portrays, but also truly come to know Jussie's personal character. He is kind, he's compassionate, he's honest, and above all, he is filled with integrity. He is also innocent and no longer subject to legal uncertainty with criminal charges against him having been dropped. We're confident in his lawyer's assurance that the case was dismissed because it would not have prevailed. So what do we think here? Because as of right now, and unless some different angle comes up on criminality, we're done. We've been done for a while. Certainly there were questions about Smollett and the story by some. And certainly the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, and the investigator said he's lying. That he paid off the two guys who helped him work out, that they bought things at the store, that he played up race in a city that has so much racial division. And he faced at one point 16 felony counts. Then, when people were debating how soon legally would this happen and is 16 felony counts the right way to go, there is a statement put out by Smollett's PR team that they're dropping the charges, and they did, because it even came out at one point that the community work he did was a part of it. And then Smollett's attorney said, nope, that was separate. It was just keep the bail. Keep the bail money, $10,000, I think it was. Well, if you remember, the superintendent and the former mayor now, Rahm Emanuel, came out and excoriated the lawyers behind the dropping the charges. And there are all sorts of questions about Kim Fox and what she did and what she didn't do and how she jumped in. And now we still have a lawsuit of the city looking for $130,000. What should they do? I can see if it is my friend, and I've believed in him before, and the story seems believable to me. If Adam is telling me some version of this story, my default is to believe him. My default, I also hope, is to be open-minded. So if they believe in him, I get why they would say it. The question is, what's the responsibility of Disney, Fox, and the audience on this? Because we talked about these before on the ratings and, you know, what would happen in the ratings when he came back. And I don't think there was a significant change. My gut tells me, and they don't have to make this decision for a while because the show just finished for the season, you got to wait and see where else this goes on the civil suit. If he ends up paying that type of money, You could make the argument that he's doing it because he has enough success. He wants to move on. He's writing the check just to end this. You can also make the argument that if he writes a check, he's offering up more guilt, and he is still adamant that he did not concoct a story. He did not lie. This was not about raising money. This was not about him bringing up the president falsely. This is not about MAGA hats. What would you do if you're the people behind this show with this story never ending? I want to give more of my thoughts. I want to see what Adam and Shalette have to say. We'll get to the high school clothing controversy. Hauser later this hour. We'll get some big news going on with the Noor trial, and Adam has that information right now. All right, Justice Smollett, I laid it out. Just a brief summation for the folks just joining us. The Empire cast saying, we believe in you, Jussie. You've always been honest. You've always been a good person. The charges have been dropped. And they write to the large, powerful companies, Disney and Fox, that are in charge of this. And they are saying, we want him back. I acknowledge that the charges were dropped. There was a lot of suspicious parts of the story from all aspects. Okay? Initially, it just looked like ignorant racism. Then slowly but surely the story, at least the perception was, that the story was falling apart. Then it seemed to fall apart completely when he faced 16 felony charges. Okay? Then, again, as I said, the Smollett group, they released a statement saying all charges are being dropped. They're sealed. And guess what? They were. But the superintendent of police is saying this is ridiculous. The former mayor is saying it's absurd. The former mayor sued for $130,000 from Smollett for money spent. And so what do you do? I'm saying at this point, because of the time, because they're not going to start shooting right away, I would wait and see what happens with the civil suit. Right now, I feel like I would need more information. I really do. And I get innocence. But how a company gets to react to something is different how the law interprets it. So at this point, I would say if Smollett's people or Taraji P. Henson or Terrence Howard and others say, I need to have more information before I can make this decision at this point. Carter, what do you think?
Well, it's also you can conveniently, say, well, first of all, I mean, like you said, if he's a friend of yours and a coworker and you honestly feel that he makes your show better by being on it, and let's be honest, if he comes back, I think a lot more people would be interested in Empire than were before.
Although I don't think the numbers have been as big as some, because he has been in a few of these episodes. Yeah. Remember, they wrote him out of a few also.
But what I'm saying is that, it's ultimately going to be the company's decision. And yep. Even if you know that, well, the company's probably not going to have him back, but I like the guy, so I want to be in support of him and write this letter, I think that's pretty safe to do so.
Yeah. Would you bring him back? I still got to find out a little more info. I got to still see if I can get more of that information before I make the decision.
If I'm Corporation Fox or whatever is producing this, I'm probably bringing him back.
Okay. Shaletta, you went back and forth in the story a few times, right?
Yeah, everybody deserves a second chance, I think. And he's not charged with anything. He's not guilty of doing anything. If
he's facing a civil suit for lying.
I understand that, but it's not a crime.
I know, but
we got liars on every job.
Right.
We just haven't been sued for it.
Yep.
So, if his coworkers.
This is a different way of lying, though.
I understand that. But if his coworkers want him to come back and they're sticking up for him, I think that's admirable. If something happens, and you guys pretend to be jumped by two angry white guys with MAGA hats on and, somehow the charges get dropped and, they're trying to figure out what they want to do and you really want your jobs back and I really want you to be here. I'm just the type of friend that's going to go to bat for you.
Yeah, but I'm not saying, we're all that person.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the friends. I'm saying the company.
Yeah, and I'm making decision as a company as based on a company decision. I'm not.
Yeah, and I'm saying the company. With Adam. I think they're going to bring him back because it's going to be more eyes on Empire.
But it didn't. The numbers weren't better.
No, I mean, like, those episodes had already been, like, taped.
But the story was already out.
Yeah.
But in 6 months from now, the story's going to be forgotten.
Oh, 6 hours.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but the numbers weren't noticeably better. Mm. Right? Again, as a friend, for sure I'm going to defend him. I got it. Well, not if I know he did it. But I'm saying if there's gray area and he's telling me no, yes. How about this one? What if he ever in the next 2 months admitted I did it?
Oh, that ain't going to happen. But you know what?
But hang on. If he said that, mm-hmm. and because we're a country of forgiveness.
We are.
We have country. And now he would write the check. The charges aren't going to come up again. Would the company then can't bring him back, right? Can we agree with that?
I think they could. I mean, we look at Ryan Lochte. Look at what he did. He caused an international crisis. When he went over at the Olympics and claimed that he was robbed by these people and, you know, we in America were so offended and these people look bad and they were talking about tourism and, you know, and then all of a sudden we find out he made it up. He got a call for a new job to go on Dancing with the Stars.
Because he was such a goofball, though, right? I mean, it was making fun of him in that way. Carter, if he ever admitted, listen, I made a horrible mistake. I'm falling on the sword. I'm admitting it with, you know, because, I mean, we as a country, not always individual, we as a country forgive a lot. Would a Disney or Fox be more inclined to do it then? If again, the staff wants them back. See, I think they're less inclined.
Yeah.
At that point. That's my guess. All right. Chime in. 81807. This is out of Houston. Shaletta, why don't you tell everybody your connection to this particular school?
It's the school I graduated from.
James Madison High School.
I was in shock. And, I really was.
And you were going there when James Madison went to high school there, right?
Right, me and James Madison. He cheated off my paper. He said right behind me.
Dolly in the class.
Dolly was there. Dolly was
cooking. Yeah.
Dolly was cooking. You know, she's coming up with some good recipes. All right, so the principal is warning parents what to wear. Here's what's out. If you're showing up at the kids' school, hair rollers, leggings, silk bonnets, any other items on the list of banned clothes, the jeans, the low-hanging jeans, dressing with the low-cut up top. The dress code to some, according to one of the TV outlets, appears to be laden with racial undertones. This is an African-American principal. I saw a number of African Americans interviewed. I don't know. Shaletta, do you know approximately the ratio of African Americans versus whites? Or?
It is a school that is probably 99.9% filled with children of color.
Okay.
African American, Latinos and Asians.
Sure.
Some Native Americans. But it is primarily historically in an African American neighborhood.
You know what? In fact, I found it. I missed it earlier. That's my fault. It's actually.
Is it 99.9?
No, it's actually. Okay. According to the Houston Independent School District, 58%. No, I think you're right. Hold on. As I saw it and then read it more here. 58% of the students in Madison High School are Hispanic, 40% are African American. So you're only off by 1%. You are off by one.
Yeah, just one.
Come on, Shaletta. Fake news. Mother of Curtin student, I'm almost insulted. I really think it's discriminatory. The language used, it was demeaning, and I'm African American. If it's misty outside and I have a hair bonnet on, I don't see how that's anyone's business. In a letter, the principal, and again, she's an African American woman, wrote that saggy pants or shorts were off limits and men couldn't arrive in undershirts, low cut tops are banned. She is a graduate of the school. She told the Wall Street Journal on Tuesday that the dress code had been necessary because parents were coming in risque clothes. Others said this is elitism and respectability politics. President described the rules as classes. I'm sorry the principal may have plenty of money and time to go to the hairdresser weekly and have her stuff done. Who are you to judge others who may not have the same opportunities that you do? Having a wrap on your head is not offensive. It should be not controversial. What do you think? Is this principal correct? Is this dripping with flat-out racism, undertones of racism? Would it be the same type of thing? Would it be slightly different if it was high school where it wasn't as much, the ratio wasn't as high of individuals of color? How would it be if it was a typical white suburbia twin city school or outstate school? I have some strong opinions on this. I'm sure Adam and Shaletta want to jump in. It's 24 past 1. I want your opinions on this. 81807. 81807. All right. I have spent a fair amount of time the last 20-some years dropping off kids at school at different grades, right? My older boys, certainly more time on the bus, and but, you know, plenty of times dropping off Quentin because of his health situation, more time dropping him off than the other boys. And, yes, I've seen pajamas. I've seen leggings. I've seen T-shirts. I've seen whatever. And it really never has made me think I'm offended. I cannot handle this. What is the problem? We've had the debate, Adam, many, many times about schools and the policy, clothing policy, dress code for kids. And I think a lot of those dress codes, let me say some of those make sense, okay? I also think we see the move all the time by kids, what they wear leaving home compared to what they wear at school is totally different. I personally think there's way too much hyperventilation about leggings and yoga pants. I think it's such an overreaction. Lighten up, Francis. Stop sounding so old. I guess I'm not going to spend a hell of a lot of time myself on what parents are going to wear to school. Some of them might be extraordinarily busy. Some of them might be lazy. Some of them might be tied to how their hair is different than your hair, or their life is different, or their finances are different. What's going on at home? Listen, I've talked about this for a long time here at The Fan, where I think dress codes in workplaces are overrated. I like buying and wearing nice clothes. You're wearing a cool Barcelona,
right?
You know, what would you say? To kind of sweat top or
it's a zip up.
It's great look.
Like a track jacket.
Right? Yep.
Yeah.
And of course your Lululemon pants. Now, yeah, some people think you should wear a suit all the time or dress all the time. I don't think so. I get if you work somewhere and they say you got to decide. Yeah. But this whole if you dress a certain way, you'll act a certain way, and you'll be more professional. A lot of times I think that's such surfacey, phony, disingenuous BS. You give the person who's responsible, kind, considerate, respectful, and you could have a T-shirt on and shorts. So I wouldn't be spending much time at all on parents' dress codes.
Yeah, the dress issue to me is one of those back in my day kind of, oh, geez, you know, look at this. I mean, the way my kids dress for school nowadays, my mom probably would look at that and say, I can't believe you're sending your kids to school. Well, guess what? All the kids at school are dressed like that.
Yeah.
It's so much different than when I was a kid being there. Do I care? No. As long as the kids are comfortable, as long as what they're wearing is respectful.
Yeah.
I mean, to and I certainly don't get what parents are wearing if they're dropping or picking up their kids at school.
So what are you going
to do? It shows me that parenting is hard sometimes and that, you know what? Kids, you got to get the kids off to school even when you're not ready to leave the house.
Exactly. And how about be glad the parents are showing up? You know, she's complaining about what parents are wearing to school. How about be glad that you have some parents who are taking the time to come to school to talk to you, to engage with the teachers, to be there and present for their children.
They could just be dropping them off.
Right. They could just be dropping them off. But, you know, from, you know, what I understand from the people who, you know, my mother lives down the street from there. When I lived in Houston, we were, you know, two blocks away. You know, like I said, I graduated from this high school. And, you know, it's an elitist thing. It's a, you know, I'm better than you. You need to come up to my standards.
So let me ask you this. Let's go to the scenario. I show up, okay? My kid goes to school, and I show up in the tank top and the low jeans. Are they not going to let me drop my kid off?
Exactly.
I mean, what if I just keep showing up wearing what is not allowed? Are you going to punish the kid?
I don't
understand how they're going to enforce it.
It's not fair, and it you know, just kind of, you know, takes us back to the racial stereotypes. And it makes it seem like all of a sudden, because a black woman has a bonnet on her head, you know, she's less educated. It's not what's on your head. It's what's in your head. And, you know, I was talking to you earlier, Laura Oaks and I had this discussion because she comes to work on Fridays with her do-rag on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. Adam, I was like liberated. I was like, I want to wear my do-rag, but I know the stereotypes that people think. Here's a black woman who's coming to work. Yep. She ain't combed her hair.
Right.
Look, she's got a bonnet on. Look at Aunt Jemima. Where's she going with that do-rag on? She's ghetto. But Laura wears it, and it's fine. It's cool. It's cute. She matches her tennis shoes with it. So now she and I are going to be wearing it together on Friday. She was like, I'll be Mrs. Butterworth, and you can be Aunt Jemima. I'm like, yes, I'm Aunt Jemima. You, Miss Butterworth. We're going to break this thing all the way down.
We'll make sure.
And we're going to wear our do-rags to work. Are we going to get a ticket? Are y'all going to send out a
roll about
dress
codes? Well, make sure Carlotta Outlay Brown is not coming up here. I mean, or else something like that could happen. Among the texts coming in the 70s, we had a walk-up because we could not wear T-shirts. I was at a school function last fall. One woman wore a sheer blouse. With a lot visible. Is this okay? Was not okay with my wife. No, we're not saying Boobapalooza is allowed. I think what Adam said earlier is
nice
naked.
Description on that text, by the way. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Very clinical.
Yes.
I cleaned it up a little bit. What about parents going into school? Well, that's, again, my point. Okay, Carter, you're Carlotta Outlay Brown, and you're dropping me off. Are they stopping you? I mean, no.
I don't. I get that.
You got a separate.
Because that really, you know, helps the situation, making the kid feel, you know, embarrassed because of their parent.
Texter, thank God it's a black principal. Otherwise, if it's a white one, Chad would say it was Trump's fault. Principal should be able to set the rules. Oh, for sure. I was ready just to pivot to that right away. Worked in a school district. One mom showed up in her S&M business attire.
Woo!
I didn't know they had those facilities in Mound, West Tonka.
Yeah. You know what you were doing? You were stereotyping, Carter.
Yeah.
You were stereotyping. What city are you saying has more of the S&M
businesses? Yeah, right, the S&M businesses.
Adam will tell us which city is more inclined to have the S&M business attire when we come back. Shaletta picked out this song specifically for Hauser. As we bring Tom in the conversation, Shaletta, you want to tell me exactly why you picked this particular tune for the young man?
Well, I picked Elvis Costello because Tom is, you know, Elvis Costello and Tom, they're kind of the same kind of guy. They're cool, laid back, but they got a lot to say.
Tom,
you know what I mean?
Tom who?
Tom Hauser.
Tom Hauser.
Yeah.
Elvis Costello.
I've never been compared to either of the Elvises.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he's closer to Elvira than he is Elvis Costello.
Wait, I forgot when it's plural. Is it Elvi? I don't think
F-I.
I've been compared to the Elvi.
You know, you once did follow Elvira around the country, though, didn't you?
Well, the Oak Ridge Boys, absolutely.
It's Elvira, yes. Mr. Hauser's with us on Political Talk. So I look at your Star Tribune today, Tom, and I see Wall's tax plan hits the poor hardest. And I know the Democrats don't agree with it. The Republicans obviously love that headline. Which is more accurate? The Wall's folks saying that's not right, or the Republicans saying, yeah, hey, Mr. Everyman, Mr. Trying to Help Out One Minnesota, look who you're hitting the hardest.
Well, as you know, I'm no expert, although I do play one on TV.
Yes, we like that.
Those numbers came from Governor Walz's revenue department.
Yeah.
This was not something that was, you know, just made out of whole cloth by somebody with a political agenda. This was an analysis of what this would do. Now, And it seems reasonable, largely because I would like to know what the numbers would be if you take the gas tax increase out, because that is clearly the most regressive of any of the taxes that are being proposed. Because, you know, somebody making $1 million and somebody making $20,000 a year pays the same rate. So that's considered a regressive tax that's going to hit the poor or the low income or middle income disproportionate to wealthier people.
So part of where the Walls folks are pushing back is they're saying this 2% health care tax, which has been on the books for an extended period of time, and they want to continue it, but it has to go, you know, it has to pass the Senate, the House, and the governor has to sign it. They're saying this shouldn't be viewed as a new tax if it's already out there. So why are we classifying this as a new tax? Isn't that a fairly fair point?
It is a fair point, but it's one of those really muddy water type of deals, because it is supposed to go away after December 31st of this year.
Yeah.
So that 2% healthcare provider tax you pay every time you go to the doctor is supposed to go away. Now, so then you're splitting hairs. Well, is it a tax increase if we vote to continue that on January 1st, or is it just neutral because we're just continuing something that's been in place for 25 or 30 years? So, you know, you can argue that either way, but it's a fair argument for them to make, but Republicans can argue it the other way as well.
Okay, Republicans and their plan. Any surprises on that? Just as expected, the normal philosophical debate, or anything a little bit different to contrast now with the new governor compared to, you know, 8 years of dealing with Mark Dayton?
Well, it is just the usual. I mean, Republicans say their bill will cut taxes by $800 million, and then they counter with all of the tax increases proposed by Democrats in the House and the governor total about $12 billion over not just over 2 years, but if you go out into the 2 years after that as well, so over a total of 4 years. And so they just say there's a huge philosophical difference, but the governor says that the Republican numbers are just I forget what his exact words were, but he said they're almost laughably low. That you just can't, you know, government is growing because it has to. The population is growing. The needs of an aging population will grow. And you can't just pretend that that's not happening.
The health care debate, if we just say, and we've touched on it, but if we just say budget and health care, have we, as usual, touched on the two most difficult issues, and it doesn't matter who the majority leader is in the Senate or whether it's Republican versus Democrat or Democrat versus Republican, that until something substantially changes, those are going to be the two issues that will either go to the deadline or go past the deadline.
Which were they? Again, healthcare?
Healthcare and the overall budget, two issues.
It's really it comes down to healthcare, which is part of the Health and Human Services bill, and then education, which is another, you know, between those two, I forget what the figure is. That's about two-thirds of the budget,
yep,
you know, right there, just on those two things. And yes, it always comes down to that. Republicans will always say that the cost of healthcare is growing at an unsustainable rate. And I think just about everybody agrees with that, but nobody agrees on what to do about it. And so that's where it gets really difficult. And Governor Walls and the House Democrats favor allowing all Minnesotans to buy into the Minnesota Care program if they so choose. And Republicans are just staunchly opposed to that. And on education, everybody agrees that education needs some more money. The question is how much more? Because really, as much as you've heard about Republicans have cut education in this year or that year,
right,
education funding has always gone up. Some years it goes up at a lower rate than what, like, let's say, Democrats wanted, but it's still always going up.
Well, I mean, I think I looked this up when we were getting near a couple of the debates we did, or you did debates and I did debates. We did the Phillips Paulson one together, where I think as Pawlenty was leaving, it was like 31 or 32 billion right in there. And now it's at Walls's projections is at 49 billion, right?
Yeah.
So it's just level of increases, right? And the Democrats are winning that public debate. I mean, if it's up $17 billion under one administration, and when the Republicans say, hey, how about a 2% increase as opposed to 6% increase, and they convince some of the public that the Republicans are cutting it, then I guess the Democrats are winning that PR battle.
And they are, but and they're making Republicans look like, you know, they're just totally underfunding everything.
Yeah.
Although Republicans will tell you that they're proposing about a 5% overall increase in spending, whereas the governor and House Democrats are closer to 8% or 9%. So, and that's a big difference when you're talking about billions of dollars. But it's not fair to say that Republicans are, you know, drastically cutting the budget. It's just not true.
No,
they are cutting the level that the Democrats are proposing and the governor is proposing, but they're not drastically cutting government.
Tom Hauser from Channel 5 with us. He'll always provide excellent coverage on Channel 5 and Channel 45. So I was involved in some research in development the last few days with an activity both of us like, and I'm just getting caught up to speed on this vote yesterday. I think it was yesterday, maybe it was the day before. You tell me, where the Republicans had to go on the record whether humans are playing a part in climate change. It was Representative Hornstein that put something out there, and all but four Republicans voted against this. Take me through the mechanics of this. Was this the Democrats trying to embarrass the Republicans? And then if the Republicans are all downplaying this, did they end up embarrassing themselves?
You know, it's a classic gotcha vote, you know, and the Democrats can do that because they control the House. So they determine what's going to come up on the floor for a vote. And, you know, so a lot of Republicans will say, I voted that way because that's exactly what they were trying to do. You know, even Republicans who don't, you know, favor the carbon-free energy by 2050 and those types of things.
Yep.
Many of them believe that the humans are at least partially responsible for climate change. They're just not willing to say we're entirely responsible for climate change. And so you get down to, I mean, really that vote is meaningless when you think about it. It's clearly they want people to get on the record so they can put it on a campaign brochure. And we see those votes every session, whether Republicans or Democrats control the House or the Senate, because they control the agenda, they control what they can force people to get on the record for, and that's really all that was.
I get it, and I get that both sides play this game, but I mean, 99% of science believe that, as you stated, that humans are playing some part. If we want to debate how much, but it's just overwhelming, and I just think you look like you're voting against science when you do this, even when it's a gotcha type of game. Walls and Gazelka working together. I had Gazelka on a couple weeks ago, and as you know, he's friendly, he's likable. I still don't sense that somehow they're going to be able to make these deals any different than when it was Dayton and Doubt as the two main guys the last, you know, 5-6 years.
I don't either, and I did a story 2 days ago, and Capitol Press Corps compatriots were saying at each news conference, Hauser, you're going to ask the special session question again, right?
Yeah.
Because you've done it so well at each of the other news conferences, because they had just come back from Easter break. They're, you know, as I said earlier, the Republicans are at zero tax increases. Democrats are at about $12 billion. There's, you know, you would usually think, well, a compromise might be a $6 billion tax increase. Republicans would never agree to a $6 billion tax increase,
yeah,
let alone a billion or two or whatever it is. So they are just light years apart on trying to reach an agreement. And I just, they all said, oh, we really think we've got enough time to get this done. But there have been really no negotiations between, you know, the heads of the Republican Senate, Democratic House, and the governor. And, you know, time is running short. They're at about 3.5 weeks left, and there is so much to do. They are so far apart on every major issue. And if you just look at history, the last two budget years in 17 and 15 both resulted in special sessions. Six of the nine budget years, which are odd-numbered years,
yep,
six of the last nine have ended up in a special session. One of them ended up in 2011 in a government shutdown. And, you know, I just, it appears to me, unless one side totally caves in.
Which isn't happening. It's just, you know, it's not. We need to stop calling it a special session. It's not that special if it happens as often as you just laid it out.
Just call it another session.
Exactly.
But special session. But, you know, it's. There is no, it's like when you and I used to do term papers in high school and college, you would always put it off until there was a deadline and you're going, okay, now I got no choice but to get this done. And so that's why you're not going to see any significant movement, I don't believe, until the last, not even last week, maybe the last 3 to 4 days. And then what often ends up happening, they finally, the pressure gets so great, they finally agree to something in the middle of the night, a day or two before they are forced to adjourn. And then they go, okay, well, now there's not enough time to process
all of
these bills.
Right.
So that's what happened 2 years ago. And so you end up having to go into a special session that way. But without that pressure of the end of session or a special session, there's little reason for either side to give in and show their cards.
As always, I blame you. I mean, I've just decided it's...
Well, I've been covering the Capitol for about 20 years, and they've had about 18 special sessions. So I don't know that we can say that there isn't some correlation.
Yeah, metrics tell me it's your fault. That's what I'm going with.
There's an algorithm out there somewhere.
Correct.
That shows a correlation to me.
All right, sir. We'll talk soon.
Okay, Chad. See you.
Elvis Costello or Tom Hauser, one of the two with us there. 152. That is the Lindis Construction Time Check, and then I have it right in front of me. Yes, I do. I have it right here. Time to call us for free home improvement estimates on windows and insulation. A reminder of probably the biggest story of the afternoon here in the state. The Muhammad Noor is expected to testify on his behalf as the defense prepares to present its case. The prosecution rests. This isn't a surprise if you've listened to a lot of people, including on our show, where Joe Freeburg and Earl Gray, two of the best defense attorneys in the state, and they both have been for 30-some years or so, both said, without a doubt, no choice whatsoever. Earl was unequivocal. Joe was most likely for sure he's going to do it. So Muhammad Noor taking the stand. First time we'll hear him. His explanations about what happened, and certainly the news will cover it. All day here on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.